to The Worst Bestsellers, where we read about Tom Cruise's tantrums so you don't have to. I'm Kate.
And I'm Renata.
And for this episode, we read Troublemaker, Surviving Hollywood and Scientology by Leah Remini. Joining us to discuss this celebrity cult memoir is Angie Manfredi, librarian, writer, and grudging Tom Cruise fan. Welcome back, Angie. It's been a minute.
It's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me back again.
Thrilled to have this beautiful topic to discuss with you. By the way, we should mention it is Celebrity Memoir May, of course, which is I'm sure it's on everyone's calendar, Celebrity Memoir May, the very real and not made up observation that we try to do in May.
Yes, absolutely. This was a fun choice, too, because I'm not sure if Angie was aware that Renata and I, well, now she is because we talked about it before the show, but Renata and I, as we may have mentioned on the show before, are part of a book club within a book club that is also known as Cult Club or Kaftan Club, where we talk about cults. And one of our very first meetings was about Scientology. And because it was one of our first meetings, we did like a deep dive. And so we are always, I, Caitlin, am always excited to read about a cult, especially Scientology, but this felt like a good pick.
Well, and Angie knew because she had, I'm pretty sure you were the one who invited me to this secret Facebook group that's for, what's the name of it? Now I'm blanking on the name of it, Angie.
It's called Murder with Friends, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's like a group for librarians who are fans of true crime and cults. And she sent the invite and I was like, Angie, I don't like true crime. I only like cults. And she was like, you should join anyway. And I was like, okay.
Oh, it's called Crime and Friendship. It's called Crime and Friendship. And it's librarians and teachers and other normal people. No, you know, who are into murders and cults. So that's why I chose when Renata was like, what celebrity memoir would you like to read? She gave me some options and I instantly chose this because I love movies. I love film. It's definitely my favorite hobby. And there is no way to be into film without running into Scientology. So it was a natural fit.
Yes. And here's like a nice encapsulation of who I am as a person and my sometimes blinders to what's going on in the world around me. I was familiar with Leah because of her involvement in Scientology and because of seeing her like do talking head interviews and stuff like that. I was not aware she was on King of Queens until I started reading this book.
I mean, because King of Queens is one of those shows you feel didn't happen, but then it, like in the show when she's like, it was on for 10 years, it's the third longest running comedy or whatever, you're like, can that be right?
No, I knew she was the Queen of Queens, but I never like really watched it. Mm-hmm. But then in reading the book, I kept pulling up Wikipedia pages about King of Queens because I was like, sorry, what? Like, first of all, I had assumed it was like a family sitcom. Like, I thought that she and Kevin James had kids. I thought it was that kind of show. But they didn't have kids until the series finale. They were just childless people.
Assholes.
In the world.
Assholes. Yeah, I love it. No, yeah. And I want to take a minute to say that I had a previously neutral opinion on Kevin James, and after this book I'm in love with him.
Same.
I didn't care about him one way or another, other than the guy who took Chris Farley's parts in Adam Sandler movies. Right, I mean, we all know it. We all know that if Chris really hadn't died, it would have been him in all those movies.
Yeah.
But after this, I left with a really positive opinion of him. So
me too. Yeah. And because the other thing, so I thought they had kids and I was like, oh, it's like one of those shows where like he's a fat, schlubby guy and he's got a hot wife and it's like, meh. And I actually still haven't seen the show, so that may well be part of it. Also, did you know Patton Oswalt seems to have like a pretty big role in the show? I didn't know that.
I didn't know until I saw the picture in the book of the finale, and then I'm like, Patton Oswalt was on this too? Like, I don't.
Yes. And then also Lou Ferrigno, aka the Hulk, plays himself as their neighbor on this show.
Sure.
And they're just like, our neighbor was the Hulk. And I guess like a recurring thing is that Kevin James's character tries to make him say like Hulk smash or whatever. And he's like, no, I'm not that anymore. I'm like, that's actually pretty funny.
Yeah.
I actually really like that. Maybe I'll start watching King of Queens. Just kidding, I won't. But now I know a lot more about it.
Well, also it's a good, I think it's a good touch too, the no kids, because a lot of that premise was the wife does all the work, the husband doesn't know shit about these kids, you know, that's the dynamic of their marriage, that she's mommy, mommy, mommy. And the idea that they don't have kids and they're just living their lives, I mean, I think that's really more textured than, you know, than you would originally think of it, that it's like, how do we navigate this life as just two single married people, as a single married people? Listen. Two just married
people. Just a couple people. Of dinks.
And that's me, right? Like, so my husband and I are that same situation. So I do think that's more interesting than we have two kids and Kevin James doesn't know, which literally is every fucking episode of Everybody Loves Raymond. And that show won 100 goddamn Emmys, right? Fucking Ray Romano, I think, won it. The least acting person on the planet won it for fucking Everybody Loves Raymond. So if Everybody Loves Raymond is the critically beloved darling, you know, so, yeah. Oh God, this is a whole different podcast. I'm so sorry.
That's a different one. Okay. And it's a good, we can close the loop, because also King of Queens exists in the same world as Everybody Loves Raymond, and those characters are friends and appeared on each other's shows. I also learned that from Wikipedia.
Okay, now we play the Inception sound.
Anyway, we read Troublemaker. I fucking loved it. Content warning for Scientology is gross and they do bad things to people. There's some like verbal abuse, some light. I don't know if I'm going to say that Shelley's not Shelley. First of all, where is Shelley? Second of all, Leah's parents, if they weren't abusive, they were like, there's some like achy parenting described. But I don't know that we're going to get into anything that's too yucky in depth.
Yeah, and I think, again, I think part of that even ties into how she talks about it.
Yeah.
Like, to me, the stuff with her father really stood out to me. And she's also like, yeah, what can you fucking do? You know? I mean, and I'll say, besides the Scientology part, and I'm sure this will come up again, I really related to this book because she's Italian-American, I'm Italian-American. I felt like we had really similar upbringings, besides that I was not in a cult, you know, but like that very much that attitude, even towards her parents. Like, I just really related to that, even at where she's like, I mean, what can you do? My dad hated me anyway, like. But I also think it explains the cult stuff, because at some point you're like, well, if you were having such a bad time in Scientology, why don't you just go live with your dad? And she says, you know, at the beginning, that was not an option. Like, that was not an option.
Yes. So let's get into the book. So Leah, I knew she'd been involved in Scientology before this. I didn't realize she'd been in it since she was a child, because her parents got divorced when she was pretty young and her dad sucks, as we just discussed. And then her mom got this new boyfriend, Dennis, who is a Scientologist. And like, Dennis was so nice. And then it was like, oh, I'm nice because of Scientology. Great, let's all be Scientologists. And then they ended up going to Sea Org when Leah was a 13 years old. And if you're not obsessed with cults, do you know what Sea Org is? We'll tell you. And by we, I mean someone else recap Sea Org, because I don't want to do it.
Oh, okay. So Sea Org is the volunteer service. I'm doing big air quotes around it. You can't see that because it's a podcast, arm of Scientology. The focus of the Sea Org is on helping to make all of the people in the world clear, which is Scientology terminology for basically like having everyone attain like the higher plane of existence and release all of the bad things both within them and, you know, affecting them, and, you know, reach this like better, everything will be better. You won't be sad. No one will be sad. There'll be no war. Everything will be great. And when you join the Sea Org, you sign a 2 billion year contract, because one of the beliefs of Scientology is that your soul doesn't like die so you, the idea would be that, like, yeah, your body might die, but, like, your soul would continue to serve the Sea Orc going forward for 2 billion years.
And it's always worth noting at this part, for those of you that are new to this, L. Ron Hubbard, who is the founder of Scientology and a failed science fiction writer, otherwise known as LRH.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think you mean the world's best-selling science fiction author.
Yeah, that's right. LRH also was fixated on boats, and part of it was because he spent a long time living on them to avoid international law, as do most fucking criminals try to avoid law, international law. So he spent a lot of time living on boats, and he got really kind of fixated on them. He got like a kind of like he was convinced that there was like military service. And so a lot of the Scientology like infrastructure and as the kids like to say, lore is built around boats, and hence the Sea Organization. And they do dress like little, you know, they have a uniform that you have to wear. And a lot of it is based around ships and sailing due to LRH's, you know, fixation and desire to avoid international law by living in international waters. So
yes, if you're interested in this, you can revisit the episode that we previously did about Dianetics, which is the foundational text of Scientology.
God, I have blocked so much of that experience out of my life forever.
Yes, me too. But then there would be times when Leah would be like, well, and Scientology says this bonkers thing. I'd be like, it does say that. I remember that.
It does. Another interesting thing that I think we mentioned in the Dianetics episode, but if you don't want to listen to that, which is just something to keep in mind, is that as L. Ron Hubbard was failing out of his science fiction career, he first created what would become Dianetics as a self-help book to, like, kind of help, you know, like, spiritually, like, here are some things you can do. And then once the fad of that ended and people weren't buying it anymore, then suddenly it was a religion and it was tax exempt or, you know, theoretically it would be tax exempt. And all of that came to him. It just came to him once the book stopped making money in its current form.
Also, another thing I think people might not know a lot about, but you know, the more you dig into Scientology, a lot of this was also based on LRH's friendship with Aleister Crowley.
Yes. That's my favorite part.
Right. So a lot, and then people are like, what did you just say? And you're like, yeah, you know, like the founder of modern Satanism. And again, Tom Cruise does not want you to think about that when you are going to see Mission Impossible. But a lot of this, like a lot of the deep down part of it is rooted in his, not just friendship, but, you know, like sexual connection, like the whole thing. Like, he had a big deal with Crowley, and who is considered by most people to be the father of contemporary American Satanism. And so I think there's a lot in there about that too, that's tied into the thing of it. And, you know, it's just all in there. Yeah. It's all in there.
Strongly recommend that if you don't want to read the entire book Going Clear by Lawrence Wright, to read the section on the early days of L. Ron Hubbard and the time that he spent with what's his name from the JPL and like Goddard. Yeah, it is fucking bananas.
Which pals, to drop some of our own lore, some of you might remember Goddard as the patron name saint of everybody's favorite Scythe Goddard, who has that same connection. that same connection to this, like, kind of looming sinister figure in American history. So
yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Referring to Scythe by Neil Schusterman, if you haven't read that delightful book, which you should.
Fix your life! Fix your life!
Listened to our episode on it, which Angie guessed it with us.
Do both. Anyway, yes. Leah, 13-year-old Leah. By the way, also, she dropped out of school at 8th grade because they went to Sea Org and, you know, she wasn't like the best student, like whatever. She didn't really want to go to school. But then Scientology also is pretty anti-education because you don't need that. You just need what the cult tells you. So she's like in 8th grade, but not in 8th grade. And they moved to Florida to live at this like motel that's owned by Scientology. And then because she's 13 and not in school and has joined the Sea Org. She is like managing a hotel, basically, like the housekeeping as a 13 year old. And she, even then, I really like her tone of this book. You know, it's very like she does have a ghostwriter who has a name. I'll link that up in a second. She and her ghostwriter, like it's funny. Like Leah's funny. It's chatty. It's very, very juicy. Like she is saying stuff where I'm like, oh my God. Like normally when we read celebrity memoirs, it's like they're kind of polite and they're like, oh, you know, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. And she's like, fuck Tom Cruise, fuck this. I'm like, yes, yes, slay. But she is like, you know what? When I was 13, I thought it was cool as hell. I had a uniform. I had a little job to do. Like, I thought it was cool, but then it became less cool because it is Scientology.
Yeah. The Sea Org members, the Sea Org work out of Florida, where there's a big, big Scientology office center, I guess. And there is like really beautiful, really nice food and all these things that are for like visiting Scientology members, but the Sea Org does not get it or get to partake. One pretty funny bit is that Leah comes up with a sort of workaround for this in that part of her job is getting meal tickets for the visiting Scientologists. So she just starts requesting meal tickets and then taking them herself and saying that she's picking up food for whoever and having like a real lunch that day instead of like whatever garbage leftovers, sometimes literal garbage, was served to the actual Sea Org members.
Yeah, like her first morning there, she says the plate they gave her breakfast on was so greasy that her food slid off of it. And when she tried to get more, they told her to like get in the present time, which is like Scientology is all about victim blaming. So it's basically like, well, since you're bad at Scientology, your breakfast fall off your gross plate. The ghostwriter of this book is Rebecca Paley. Good job, Rebecca. You did it.
Yeah. So after a while of being in the Sea Org, just as Leah and her sister are like trying to figure out how to best fit in and sort of succeeding, she is caught because like narking is also a big part of Scientology, and she's caught quote unquote heavy petting a boy, which is against you know, the rules of Scientology, and her, which I thought was very charming, in her teenage confusion, she responds that he did it lightly, like yeah. Not even trying to be a smart ass, just not understanding the outdated term heavy petting. And so in order to not be kicked off of the Sea Org and in a very bad way or declared a suppressive person, her mother moves them from the Sea Org, her and her sister Nicole, and moves them to LA to be in the rehabilitation project force. To avoid being in the rehabilitation project force.
Yeah, which is like your punishment duty, and they have to wear all black and do like hard manual labor and you know, they're basically like persona non grata and everyone gets to treat them like garbage.
Yeah. So they moved to LA. But the other thing about Scientology is that when you join the Sea Org, you get all of these free, quote unquote, Scientology courses, but you also have to pay them back the money that you spend on the courses. So they owe thousands. She and her minor sister, she's also a minor, her sister's older than she is. Owe Scientology thousands and thousands of dollars for the like couple years that they were in the Sea Org, if even that long. And so they have to like get jobs immediately. And the best way that Leah can figure out to get a job is to get a job within like the Scientology businesses that have popped up around the Celebrity Center. So she kind of jumps from one business to another. Like at one, she, you know, she's doing like retail and stuff. And then she convinces this guy to hire her as an admin, but she's terrible at admin. She doesn't know shorthand. She's never used a typewriter before. And then he moves her to like a different role in her company, in his company. And she's terrible at that too. And then he moves her to a third role and she's very good at it. But what she really wants to do is act. So she manages to get a friend to connect her to an agent and starts taking auditions and finally gets a couple small roles and then gets cast in a spinoff of Who's the Boss.
Yeah. And the two things that really stood out to me from that part, and I told my husband, you know, the time when her mother refuses to let the kids get sent to the camp and the mom's like, we're just not going to do that. I think there's little bits throughout the book and the stealing the sandwiches, you know, because I want to eat, where you can see peeking through not just her, but other members of her family being like, I don't know, man, I don't know if I believe this totally. And I really liked that because I think there's so much in that, in the cult memoir space where that never comes out, or that it comes out with like, one morning I woke up and I realized this is a cult and I immediately left. But that little, that like little bits of parts where you're like, I'm not entirely in this. And I also really admired throughout all of this, she was like, but you know what? I believed in Scientology. It was really helping me. It like made me feel confident. Like I kept believing in Scientology. So I think those dovetail really well. And I also like the part when they came to LA and she was like, everybody engaged in child labor and it was no big deal. And you were like, yeah. I'm sorry, wait. And so like, Kate, when you were like, yeah, she didn't know how to run an office. Of course she didn't, pal. She was 12 years old and she had never went to school. But that never occurs to them. They're like, why aren't you trying harder? I thought that part was really good. And I think it gives us hints of like, you know.
I have an interjection that this book sent me on a lot of Wikipedia rabbit holes, maybe more so than usual. But she mentions around this time that Scientologists refer to non-Scientologists as WOGs, which I hadn't heard. It's probably been in some documentary, but it didn't really click for me. But maybe because here she defines it as well and orderly gentlemen. And I was like, what the fuck? And then so I Googled it and I'm just going to read this. WOG is an offensive term in British English, which refers to various immigrant groups. Its etymology is debated. One theory suggests worthy Oriental gentlemen, which is less pejorative than contemporary usage would suggest. Or more plausibly, it may be an abbreviation of Gollywog, the racist doll popular in the Victorian era. It seems to have been picked up by one of America's most famous and controversial religious leaders, L. Ron Hubbard. Hubbard spent the bulk of the 1960s living in Essex, and many of the church's ardent early proponents, such as David Gaiman, were British. And so, first of all, WOG, okay, like you've picked up a British slang term. And then I was like, oh, David Gaiman, click. And because I knew that Neil Gaiman, the author, was raised Scientologist.
Yep.
But I did not realize that his dad was like the head of the British Scientologist Church.
Yep.
He was like the main British Scientologist.
Yep. Yeah.
Much to ponder. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, what if, casual listener, I told you that LRH was also crazy racist? Would you believe?
Shocking.
I know. Shocking. Yeah.
Anyway, I do believe that Leah believed it stood for well and orderly gentleman, yes. Which still makes no sense and is weird. Yes. But what? Anyway, all this is happening in LA, and also we learned about WOGs.
Also, yes. I'm older than both of you, I think. Yes, I'm much older than both of you. Yeah. And so I want to interject. I want to take this moment to interject. I remember watching Living Dolls on television as a child. And I was
this
like,
this is a show I never heard of in my life.
Right. And so this is the spinoff, the Leah Remini books from Who's the Boss? And I will say one of the parts of the memoir that made me laugh out loud was when she told her mom she had booked a job on a show about models and her mother said, who are you going to play?
Yes.
Which is like the most Italian mother shit of all time. No. Yeah, I like that. But it's basically like Models Inc. They live together in a house, but they're all teenage girls. I don't have like a real clear memory of it. But I definitely do remember it. And I was really into Who's the Boss because even as a child, I had no concept of what shipping was, but I desperately wanted Tony Danza to get together with Angela, with Judith Light. Tony, her name was Angela on the show. I desperately wanted them to kiss. Like I really remember thinking that as a, like a tween. I was like maybe 9 or 10 watching these shows. I really remember that. And I remember watching a couple episodes of the spinoff and being like, this is a piece of crap. So I knew it was going to get canceled. But it's also a great celebrity name drop, of which there are many in this book. And yes. If you are keeping a chart in your head of positive people, she also gives Tony Danza a lot of credit in this book for helping her figure out how the industry works. And he was really kind to her. And that's always, again, another nice thing to hear. When you had a prepubescent girl, you were like, I'm going to teach you how to show up on a set. Not, hey, baby, how do those shorts look on you? So that's nice always to hear. So Tony Danza, positive.
Yes.
Love to hear it.
Yes. During this time, we also get name drops from most of the cast of Friends, but particularly is going up for auditions against Jennifer Aniston pretty often, and they have kind of a friendly rivalry, but like friendly, but then Jennifer gets Friends, and Leah's like, damn it. And Leah also, she auditioned for Monica also, but she didn't get Monica.
Well, and the thing I appreciated there, and this is why you read celebrity memoirs, I liked her being like, everybody in town knew it was going to be a hit. So that's a thing that comes up a lot in celebrity memoirs, or when they tell you like the backstory of a show. And I hate when they're like, none of us knew, you know, I mean, it was a miracle. We're all surprised. So I love that she told the truth, which was this was a Cracker Jack script. It was great parts. Everybody wanted it. We all felt like, wow, this is like lightning in a bottle. So I like that. I like that part, too.
She has this job on Living Doll. She's really excited about it. It's canceled after one season. She's devastated. She goes and gets like a few other bit parts. Yeah. And then like some longer running guest starring roles and stuff like that. And throughout this, she does meet her husband, Angelo, who was a singer at a – no.
He's a salsa dancer and singer, musician.
Yes, at a club, yeah. And they – when they first met, she found out that he was still married – and due to like the beliefs of Scientology, what she had to do is encourage him to get involved with the church, which she did, and get his wife involved with the church. And they went to marriage counseling and decided to get back together. And she was devastated. But then his wife did eventually break up. And Angelo reached back out to Leah and said, like, hey, I'm not with my wife anymore, and I just feel like you're the person who I want to be with. And so they got back together.
Also, I think worth noting, because I loved it so much, she has to pay for their counseling.
Yeah.
Yes.
She has to pay for Angelo and his now ex-wife's counseling.
Yeah. That's part of the way Scientology says she has to make it right. And I want to also say, too, that I think it's also worth noting and hilarious that Angelo is like, hey, Scientology's not so bad. It's given me some helpful ideas, you know, and not the counseling with my wife. But he does think to himself, he's like, yeah, I can see how this would be useful. And again, you know, I think there's a lot in there about that. I think, Renata, you said earlier about how it's victim blaming. They're like, you had the affair, so you pay for the counseling. And yet Angelo's like, hey, maybe there's some strategies in here. So I think both of those are kind of like revealing moments, you know?
Yeah.
Also, by the way, they're still married. There was a moment in the text where like she referred to him in the past tense or something. And I was like, oh no, are they divorced now? They're still married. Good for them.
Mm-hmm. Good. So she, during this part, gets a pilot for what will become the King of Queens, and it, you know, she's excited about it. She feels like this is maybe like something that she's been like kind of burned out at this point by going like from these bit guest parts, over and over again, or like short-term stints on shows. And she meets Kevin James and immediately is like, this is a guy that's gonna have what it takes to do something like this. And
yeah, and he is like legit from Queens and she's from Brooklyn. And she says, you know, if we are both in New York, that would be like we're from different countries. But since we're in LA, we're like, oh, we're neighbors.
Yeah. And I, real quick, I do want to say a thing I liked again in this part of the memoir was just like with the script, how hard it is to be a gig working actor. Even when you're booking stuff, I thought she did a really good job capturing that even when you're booking stuff and, you know, she says in there about she bought a car. It was so great. And then they repossessed the car. She couldn't pay for the car. So, you know, that gig actor thing where she's so beat down from like, you do a pilot, she's like, I can't even count how many pilots I did that never got picked up. And it also tells you how much Hollywood has changed now and why we miss there's elements of the studio system you really miss. But I think it does a good job capturing that feeling of that era. And for not just that era, but many eras of what it was like to be a working gig actor in Hollywood, where you're constantly trying to hit it. And I was also moved by the part where she was like, I knew if it wasn't going to work in this with Kevin James, like, it's not going to work. Like,
yeah,
you know.
But it does, it gets picked up. And like, this is another person who was, you know, I think Renata mentioned earlier, like, she has nothing but like wonderful things to say about Kevin James. Kevin James, spoiler alert, is one of the people who's really there for her when she leaves the church. And it, you know, like Angie was saying earlier, like, this went from me being like, I don't know who this guy is, I'm sure he's fine, to being like, he sounds incredible. Like, somebody pat this man on the back and shake his hand.
Mm-hmm. And I have to take a pause, another pause, and say that she includes some pictures and stuff in the book as per norm with Celebrity Memoir. And I have to mention that Kevin James has signed a headshot to her, and he wrote, and I'm going to read directly. He wrote on the headshot, "To Leah, it's weird. You play my wife on TV, yet I'm fat. Merry Christmas. I love you, Kevin James." And I have never been more affirmed in anything I've ever seen in my life, because so much of the discourse about schlubby dude, hot lady, literally came back to, oh, are you saying a hot lady would ever fuck a schlubby dude? Yeah. 24/7, 365, motherfuckers. I think fat guys are hot as fuck. And I'm fat too, but I'm not the only one. So I love that he writes on there that he knew that people were saying, how could this fat guy land Leah Remini? Well, fat guys get it, because fat guys are hot. So that was another thing that in my, you know, Kevin James appreciation post, like, skyrocketed my feelings for him. So, yes. Kevin, I love you. Call me. I love you so much. Call me. I have ideas. Okay.
Two other things in this zone. Not only is it hard to be like a working actress, but it's hard to be a working actress and Scientologist, because the time commitment is so immense of all the dumb classes and, like, you know, e-meter sessions you have to do. And she was just exhausted from like spending hours of Scientology bullshit on top of working. And then also, similar to how she's like, I knew Friends was going to be huge, she's like, I thought this script was funny. I thought it was funny, but nobody liked it. And everybody kind of, you know, it wasn't a cool hip comedy. It was this like classic blue collar thing that everyone was like too cool for, but we lasted for 9 seasons, bitch.
Yeah.
And also, I'm sorry, real quick, ahead. I will say again to the thing I alluded to earlier, she also mentions on here that she never on set is deliberately trying to recruit people. And again, that was a time when I told my husband, this is a little crack in the thing of like, she's saying to herself, don't tell people about Scientology, don't make it weird. And I thought that was revealing. And again, leads back to that thing that there's always like a crack in it. And also tied with that, I think the other thing that really stood out to me there was, again, if you're new to Scientology, the emphasis that even with the fact she's in this successful show, she's making money, they expect her to, quote, work the program 12 hours a day. And like, they're saying, what are you doing on the weekend? And she's like, hanging out. But the answer is she's going to work the program, because in a cult, you never get time off even when you're famous. And I genuinely believe they're still making Tom Cruise work the program. I think they make Tom Cruise go in, and Tom Cruise loves it. And he's like, I can't get enough of this, that you still have to work the program. And that means you still have to pay us.
Yeah. So some documentary, I can't remember which one it was. I don't think it was Going Clear, but it might have been. Like, they literally talk about how like, it's a special assignment to be Tom Cruise's auditor, and how, like, it is, he does sessions for, like, hours and hours and hours every day, which is just,
And the special part isn't that he doesn't get out of auditing. It's that the person is just there with him all the time. So yeah. He doesn't have to travel for it. He doesn't have to go for it, but he's still doing it. Like,
nope.
So, you know, I think that is also revealing in the this part of the Leah Remini book. A, she's not telling him about it, but B, she's still doing it. So she, you know, there's that section where they're like, what are you doing on the weekend? And she's like, talking with my family. I gotta go. Because she doesn't want to tell them, I'm working the program for 12 hours a day on Saturday. I have to, you know, I work this full, it's grueling work to do a sitcom. You work long time hours, and then you have to go and continue to pay Scientology to do the coursework. So
yeah, it's wild. And
yeah, so she does talk about how, like, I thought this was really insightful too, where she's like, people, you know, Scientology likes to promote the idea that Scientology can help get you ahead in the business, but actually, like, people think it's kind of weird. And that's another reason why I don't really like talking about it.
Yeah.
And she says, she does say, like, so I, you know, I was supposed to do my, like, celebrity business as a Scientology, but rather than recruiting, I focused on trying to help people who already were in the church get ahead. And that was how I focused my, you know, Scientology volunteer work that I had to do, which, again, like, nice. She's not really trying to recruit people. However, yeah. She is OT1, which is the first of operating Thetan levels. And when you get to OT8, that's when you learn about Xenu. But when she gets to that level, the church basically makes her get married because they're like, don't you think it's weird that you're not married? And so she tells Angelo, and he's like, okay. And then the proposal scene, as she describes it, is such a slapstick, funny thing. Because it's like at a restaurant, and he's trying to do a little bit where he's like, oh no, I dropped something, let me get it. And the waiter is like, did you order calamari? And she's like, honey, get off the floor. And he's like, no, I'm looking for something. And then the waiter's like, excuse me, the calamari? And he's like, oh, look, I found this ring. And the waiter's like, but the calamari.
Yeah. Like, it gets to the point where, as she describes it, he's literally, like, on one knee holding up a ring, and she's like freaking out. And the waiter's like, so should I just put this calamari here, or...
but it worked out.
Yeah, it's very charming. I found so much about this book so charming. And that scene in particular I laughed quite a lot. So she gets married to him. They have this whole big wedding.
That was filmed for a TV special.
So, okay. I want to say here, like, again, as you might've noticed, I know a lot about, like, you know, celebrity stuff, because we all have hobbies. No, I know a lot about celebrity stuff and Hollywood stuff, but the two bits in this that, like, surprised me was when, A, so the baby being born was an MTV thing, and the wedding was an MTV thing. And I'm like, the fuck? I don't have any memory of that. And I know, you guys, reality TV is my weak spot. I don't know shit about it. I don't watch any reality TV other than my murder shows. But, like, I didn't know any of that. And she slips that in where she's like, yeah. And also they were filming the wedding for VH1. And I'm like, what? What the? What? What? So, I know, you're talking about Rabbit Hole. Like, what?
I was surprised by that, too, because, like, I mean, again, I did know she was, like, a famous sitcom person. She's the Queen of Queens. I didn't really think she was, like, famous enough that people would want to watch her wedding at that time. But
yeah.
But I also feel like, I mean, think about kind of where VH1 was at that point.
For sure.
Like, I think they would do basically anything. And because Leah had to give so much fucking money to the church constantly, I'm sure she was looking for any money-making opportunity.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and also
the church was telling her, get the money to give,
So that we can ask you for $100,000 to do something at the drop of a hat.
Yeah.
But so that she has this wedding that's recorded for reality TV. She gets pregnant. She has a baby that is also recorded for reality TV. One of the things that came up that I do remember from Dianetics is that she doesn't want to
read this. Okay. I pulled a quote. I want to read the whole thing. My plan was to be a good Scientologist and not use an epidural. But when I felt the real thing go down, I yelled, get that anesthesiologist in here before I kill somebody. And then the doctor is kind of joking, like, I wonder why you waited so long. And then she says, I didn't even try to explain to him that the church teaches you that drugs will make the baby susceptible to what is said during labor so that it gets recorded in your child's reactive mind, the place where pain is stored. So if I said to a nurse, you are a horrible person, my daughter might go through life acting out the role of a horrible person, thinking I was talking to her. And I was like, yes, that is a huge part of Dianetics. It's bonkers. So yeah, Scientology preaches a silent birth where you're not supposed to talk at all. But she didn't do that because she's Leah Remini and get fucked.
Yeah. So she has to get a nanny because, of course, she's filming King of Queens and she's still doing Scientology coursework, like, as soon as she gets done filming for the day. There's some really, I'm guessing, I do not have children myself, but I thought that some of the stuff that she talked about with regards to raising her daughter, Sophia, felt like it was the kind of, like, relatable sort of to, you know, she's supposed to be the celebrity mom, and she's like, I don't like playing with my kid. Like, I love my daughter. I love holding her. I love reading to her. I love looking at her, but I don't want to, like, get down on the floor and play Barbies with her. And I feel like a shithead because of that. And, like, just like her coming to realize that she didn't have to be her child's playmate in order to be a good parent. And, you know, some other stuff about, like,
the part where she's, like, freaking out and makes the doctor come do a house call because she's like, the baby won't stop crying. What's wrong? And the doctor comes and, like, she's fine. She's just a baby. And she's like, what?
Yeah.
It was. And, you know, so real quick, back to the silent birth part. So my husband is a normal human. And so.
Brag.
So when I told him, he knows a lot about Scientology just from hearing my bullshit. But when I got to the silent birth part, he was like, what the fuck? That was like a lot for him. And I don't know if you guys know this, but on TikTok, it's a huge deal. Playing with your kids is a huge deal on Parenting Talk. It's a huge controversial topic on Parenting Talk. So I also thought this is old. This book's like, you know, 15, 20 years old. But it's really current and it's a really endless conversation in parenting. And I also thought, no offense to her, because I think I have a lot of respect for her, but I also thought it was obvious that she was raised in a cult, that she's trying to have, like, normal relations with her daughter. And it's not just, I don't want to play Barbies with her. So much of it is she just has a hard time understanding childhood, and it's not her fault. And I'm not even dissing on her mother, because I think she doesn't diss on her mother. She loves her mother, is very close with her still. But I think that in those sections, you can tell that she was raised in a cult, which is not to say that if you're not raised in a cult, you'll never have any parenting problems. It's totally perfect. But there are moments of emotional disconnect that it is obvious that she was raised in a cult.
Yeah.
So she gets a nanny, and her nanny is very specifically not a Scientologist. She starts becoming, like, a big Scientologist celebrity. She's on the cover of the magazine. She's invited to, like, lots of things as, like, you know, oh, you're one of, like, the, because, you know, as we said earlier, there's not a ton of Scientology success stories. Like, you could probably name 4 or 5 off the top of your head, but that's really it, you know? So she's, like, invited to a lot of things as a very visible person in Scientology, and they ask her for money constantly for everything. For, like, oh, we're going to do this. Will you give us money for it? We're going to do this. Can you give us money for it? We need money for this. And she just writes the checks because that's what she's told she has to do to help clear the planet. She eventually gets in with David Miscavige, who's referred to as COB, the chairman of the board, and his wife, Shelley, who you may be aware of due to some, like, highly publicized Scientology stuff about Shelley being missing.
Mm-hmm. Due to where is she?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And she also becomes sort of friends with Tom Cruise, but she thinks he's fucking weird as hell, but also knows that he's, like, the big wig. I mean, not, like, David is the big wig at Scientology, but, like, Tom Cruise is the Scientologist and has to be treated with a level of respect. So she, like, does not say, like, there's a scene that just feels insane where she's talking about how she's over at Tom's house and Katie Holmes is there, and it's her and Angelo and some other people and a bunch of Tom Cruise's private Sea Org members who just, like, follow him around. And Katie Holmes's private Sea Org member who just followed her around. And Tom decides to make cookies, and somebody has laid out, like, slice and bake cookie dough. And he's looking for ingredients, not dough. So he starts freaking out on the Sea Org members and, like, shouting at them. And, like, where is this? Why can't you tell me where this is? Like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Like, just... And so Leah, by her telling, is the one who's like, oh, ha-ha, look, I just noticed there's some cookie dough right here. I think that they thought you meant slice and bake. Ha-ha. And Tom's just like, oh, how funny. Okay. And then just, like, starts making the cookies.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems both not out of character for, like, the public persona of what we get of Tom Cruise, and also seems like it would be a terrifying nightmare to be around this man.
And I want to say, too, so what happens is she starts pulling in bank with King of Queens, and she gets famous. And when she gets famous, they give her an entirely separate entry into the Scientology. It's not a church, but it's the big blue building in Hollywood. They give her an entirely separate entry into it. The more money she makes and the more celebrity the more famous she is, and King of Queens is helping her bring it in, she gets a whole separate entrance. And through that is how she gets connected to Cruise. And she feels excited because he's the biggest movie star in the world. And that's kind of how she connects with him and David Miscavige and Shelley. And I think is like, you know, there's a different entrance now. You don't have to go through the main entrance anymore. Even that, I think, is telling. And the other thing I want to say, too, like, I think it's really interesting that at first she's really swept up by him, and then she's almost immediately like, bleh, bleh. And I think she does a good job getting that across. Bleh, that instant, like, we're in an uncanny valley territory here.
Yeah.
Yeah. She does talk at first about, like, you know, he has this charisma when he's talking to you. You feel like you're the only person in the room, but then, another thing that I think is wild is Tom Cruise is referred to as Mr. Cruise in the church. Mm-hmm. And, like, Mr. is a title that is only used for, like, the highest members of Sea Org or whatever. And it's
gender nonconforming. Anybody can be a Mr. It's gender nonconforming. And yet Tom Cruise gets it. And again, that picks at Leah Remini. What the fuck? Why is this guy, like, that picks at her,
as a sense of injustice.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, another wonderful name drop in this is that Leah is really good friends with Jennifer Lopez, who she met because they were friends with Mark Anthony first because of Angelo's music career, and Mark, you know, they're in a similar, like, Latin music world. And then Mark married J-Lo at the time, and she was like, hell yeah, J-Lo. So then here's where things really start to take a turn is when she and her husband get invited to Tom and Katie's wedding. And then they're like, oh, and also, could you bring J-Lo and Mark Anthony? And she's like, that's weird. Like, J-Lo doesn't really, like, know them, but I'll ask. And they're like, yeah, it's going to be totally cool. We're chartering a private plane just for Tom's guests. And, like, it's in Rome, and it'll be a really good time. And just, like, you know, you're invited, but also please bring Jennifer Lopez. And then Jennifer Lopez is like, yeah, okay, why not? It could be fun. And then throughout it, like, the way that Leah is getting these texts from various Sea Org members being like, like, where's Jennifer? Oh, she's going to bed early. No, she needs to come out. And like, they're just trying so hard to get her photographed and make it seem like she's part of the whole thing that really, you know, is weird to her.
Yeah. And it also is weird that she realizes once it becomes clear that, like, when they get to the wedding, she realizes she and Jennifer are not at the same table, which is weird because Jennifer only knows her and her husband, Jennifer and Mark Anthony. She realizes that at every event, this was happening. Like, they would get somewhere and it would be like, oh, you guys aren't seated together. That was an oversight. Or like, oh, you're on different, you're in different cars. Oh, okay. If you're going to take the same car, like, sorry, like, we didn't even think about that. And like, constantly people are trying to get her and Angelo, Leah and Angelo, away from J-Lo and Mark Anthony. And it's like, it like finally occurs to her at the wedding, and like, at the rehearsal dinner or some dinner beforehand, like, shit really hits the fan. Like, she notices that a couple Sea Org members who are married to other people are like messy, making out and acting really judgmental towards Leah. Like, one of them steals her phone at one point. And
they're drinking wine, which is forbidden.
Yeah.
Like, any alcohol.
And a brief aside to say, when Kate was talking about the people hanging out at Tom Cruise's house, again, this is deep in the lore of Scientology, but there's Scientology high ups who are clearly having an affair, and they're behaving in ways that it's not that Leah thinks is morally wrong, but that she knows as a person who served is they came in. Remember, they came in the cult low level. As a person who served, she's like, we would have been literally like tortured for that. Like, we would have been sent away. We would have been disciplined for that. And they're getting away with it. And that seems weird to me. It seems weird to me that the cult seems to have a hierarchy. And I think that's a really key part of her. And I just really want to stress this. I know a lot of people leave Scientology, but her is a high-ranking celebrity who left. She gives a particular insight into it that I do think is really unique, because yeah, she has viewed it from a lot of angles. And mm-hmm. viewing it now as the angle of being best friends with J-Lo and starting to be like, what the fuck, is very different than other people who have left the church and talked about it publicly. And I think that's a big thing, and a big thing that she deserves credit for. And I still to this day don't think she gets enough credit for it. You know, they're dedicated to ruining her life. And Tom Cruise saved cinema with like 2 years ago. I mean, like, he's I mean, that's a real thing. Like, if you go back 2 years ago to look at like the Oscars luncheon, which is where all the nominees show up, everybody there wanted to talk to Tom Cruise, who was there because he was nominated as a producer of Maverick, which was nominated for Best Picture. Everybody there went up to him and they wanted to talk to him. He was the guy that day. Steven Spielberg was there and he went up to him and told him, you saved movies. So like, to go against that,
yeah,
it's a big deal. And I, you know, I, it's significant to me. And I think that she, you know, is really brave.
I would yes. fucking follow this woman into hell after reading
yeah,
this book.
Yeah. Yes. No, I really believe that. And I, you know, I believe that, like, with no hyperbole. I think she's really brave and she did a yes. really hard thing.
Yeah. Yes. And a few other like whack things at this wedding. I think this was maybe the rehearsal the night before, but she, baby Suri Cruz at this point, and you know, she's Suri's a baby and everyone's obsessed with this baby because it's, you know, Tom and Katie's baby, and the baby is just like lying on the floor crying, and a couple of Sea Org members are like staring around and like staring at the baby and throwing around like Scientology buzzwords, like, you know, get clear baby or whatever, and Leah's like it's not that, but it's like something and Leah's like, what the hell? And she comes and like picks up the baby and is like, this, you have to like do baby things for a baby, idiot. And it's just weird that like the parents are there, like, no one is taking any care of this baby.
The fucking like, what, the thing that like seems to flummox her second most after the fact that this baby is crying and no one will pick her up is that she was like, she's probably hungry. And they're like, oh, well, we have a bottle, but it needs to be heated up. And they're like, she's like, we're at a restaurant. And they're like, okay. And it's like, ask them to heat it up. And they're like, we can do that. It's very like, it's very weird. She ends up being the one who has to heat up the bottle for the baby.
Yeah. And then the other notable weird thing about this wedding is, of course, that Shelly Miscavige isn't there. Where is she? And this is really the first time that Leah's like, you know, because David is there and it's like, oh, they're married. And like, you know, Shelly's friendly with them too. And, you know, Leah's like, I'm friendly with Shelly because we've been in the same circle, but she's not necessarily like, Shelly's my bestie. But she's like, Shelly's not here, where's Shelly? And then the various like Sea Org people are like, you don't have the rank to ask where Shelly is. And she's like, that's such a weird thing to say, because I'm just like, why isn't like my friend here? Or, like, her husband is here, or what the heck? And everyone's just like, don't even ask that. Why are you asking that, weirdo?
Yeah, it's it's culty is what it is.
And I just briefly talked about Tom Cruise in the year of our Lord 2023, 2022. But I also want to say, you know, this book was a great flashback to me to the Surrey, Tom, Kate, Tomcat era.
Tomcat. I forgot that.
It really took me back to what an enormously dominant force this was in the media narrative. You know, they made a big deal that she had Katie Holmes had a Tom Cruise poster on her wall when she was a kid, and then she grew up to marry him. And
oh my gosh,
it was everywhere, and Shuri was everywhere, and it was a big thing. It was a big thing for Tom Cruise, and it was a huge media thing. It was everywhere. They were a couple. They had the name, you know. So I think it took me back to that too, of like that cultural moment where it was so dominant in the tabloid press.
Yes. I should also say this book came out in 2015, so it's, you know, a little bit older at this point. And then referring obviously on books and events that happened, you know, well before 2015. Leah, before the wedding, she talks about how she was on the red carpet for something and people, like, it was huge news that she had met Surrey because Surrey, you know, they hadn't posted a photo or anything publicly yet. And so everyone was like, oh my God, what's Surrey Cruise like? And she was like, a baby? Like, literally, she was like a baby. And they were like, haha, but for real. And she was like, for real, like a baby?
Yeah, like, I'm a person. Actually, I don't know if people who listen to the podcast and don't follow me on social media know this. I love your baby. I want to see a picture of your baby. I want to hold your baby. I am happy to change your baby's diaper for you, to feed it, to put it down for a nap. Like, I love babies. But even I, like, you know, and like, very clearly, they're not going to get pictures of Surrey from Leah. But, like, unless you're going to, like, if someone says
there's
to me,
there's not a lot,
like,
to say about a baby.
Yeah, a baby's a baby.
Well, and also the answer is they want her to be like, you know, Scientology's like, that's great. We want people constantly to be associated with you with science. So, like, you know, the cult's like, this is great cult business. Like, and again, that's where she's puzzled. She doesn't understand why they would want to talk about the baby.
Yeah.
Because it's a cult thing, pal. The cult's getting cult tension. So and also, just for those of you playing at home, I think Surrey Cruise is going to be 18 very soon. So.
I don't need to know that.
Okay.
Well, I don't need to think about that.
You say that now, you know, but okay.
I'm that's impossible because 2015 was like 2 years ago.
Was it?
Yes. Time is a flat circle. Surrey Cruise is a little baby, and and so Leah comes across, she's genuinely shocked about this, like, non-Scientology behavior from higher ups at Scientology, and so she gets home and she's like, I have to, like, file knowledge reports, and I have to, like, narc on all this stuff that I saw because it's so against Scientology policy. And then, you know, some double reverse trap, she gets sent to the ethics board because everyone else filed knowledge reports on her for being, like, rude and asking questions she wasn't supposed to be asking and, like, blah, 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 blah. And she's like, but they were the ones, like, drinking and cheating on their spouses and leaving babies unattended. But she's the one who gets in trouble for it.
Yeah. So she's, like, at this point, kind of over Scientology, but also not quite ready to go yet.
Yeah, I mean, there's a big sunk cost fallacy. She's been doing this since she was like 8 years old.
Well, and also, I want to just real quick, I want to say here that she is not alone in this period that tons of Scientologists feel that the church loses direction when David Miscavige takes over. So I think that's worth noting that, like, they feel that he has, that there should have never been another CBO, that it was a position that LRH only should have done. And lots of people in this period start to get disaffected with the church because they are like, that's not what he intended. David Miscavige is turning it into his own perfect personal thing. So that's like this is a breaking point for a lot of people who've been in Scientology for a long time in this era. And I also want to say, I obviously, I know a lot about it, and by the book, I was a nerd to it. But I don't know about you guys, but, like, the punishments that they made her do after the wedding, you know, and they kept her for, like, they kept her. She was a celebrity, and she was on a hit show, and they still kept her in Clearwater for this basically re-education. And the punishments they made her do, like they made her write letters to Tom Cruise, and she spent hundreds of dollars making this present for, and she had to buy etiquette books for the base. So, you know, that was really intense for me. And I think that's the other reason worth noting, that she's kept there after the wedding. I have to look at my copy. I don't know how long, several months.
It's like
hiatus.
The whole summer hiatus for King of Queens. Yeah.
And she's basically kept there for re-education. And she doesn't say that. And even now, even still, after she's left the cult, it's hard for her to accept that they kept her there basically in containment, right? So like they basically kept her there for re-education and that she was basically a prisoner. And even now it's hard for her to process. And it's hard for her to process because, again, like I don't know about you guys, but that was hard for me to process. Like, like she's a pretty high up member at this point and they're still like, we don't give a shit. Like,
yeah.
It did remind me of, not to just like keep referencing other Scientology media, in, I think it's Going Clear, one of this woman who they interview, who I think her name is Sparky or something similar to that. But she was John Travolta's like personal assistant, and she is kept there with her baby for like months, and she escapes by saying the baby's sick, I need to like take her to the pediatrician or something, and calls like her sister or someone and says like, you need to meet me here. And literally like an armed guard takes her out to like get the medicine from the doctor or whatever. And she just jumps in the car and is like, drive, and is genuinely afraid they're going to race after them or shoot them or something.
And by the way, I did just Google it. I'm so sorry. How could you forget? Her name is Spanky.
Spanky. Yeah.
And it is from Going Clear.
And that's another, we get an escape story like that in this book as well, of like waiting for the car and just taking off. And I think that the part that Leah Remini is like not allowing herself to access is like, they were trying to do that to me too. Like, so I think that's another thing about this book, that there's like, you know, she was a celebrity, blah, blah, blah. But there's clear points in this where, you know, Scientology is like, we're gonna make this pay, you know, like,
yeah,
so. Intense cult memoir stuff.
Yeah. And then, so there's a little bit of, you know, she goes and has to do the truth rundown, which is this like re-education thing, like blah, blah, blah. And then this other Scientology documentary, John Sweeney's Scientology documentary, it's not Going Clear, it's a different one, but it airs the same day as the series finale of King of Queens. And she is like, you know, end of the King of Queens era, kind of adrift. I didn't know that she was one of the original ladies on the talk show called The Talk. And she writes very candidly about this also. Like, she's fired because of beefing with Sharon Osbourne in like a way that, I mean, she writes about it in a way that makes them both sound kind of bad, to be honest.
Yeah.
But Sharon Osbourne was like more powerful and got Leah and also Holly Robinson Pete kicked off the show.
Jeez.
I thought the talk chapter was really interesting.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of celebrity gossip in that one if you're into it. And I also thought it was just a look at like the dynamics of like making a show, with a lot of people on it. And, you know, and again, she talks a lot of shit, but she also, as Renata alludes to, she doesn't make herself seem like she never did anything wrong.
And, you know, we didn't really mention, she starts this book off, like the very intro is like, I'm Leah, I'm like a liar, I'm a cheater, I've, you know, slept around, I've, you know, and I'm just telling you up front all the bad things about myself because I know that the Church of Scientology is going to like tell you these things, and I'm here to tell you like those things are true, like I have, you know, made these mistakes, but also everything I'm telling you now is true. And it really does like, you know, make her seem very credible to me. Like, she is not sugarcoating anything. To me, obviously, I don't know her. I haven't done like a full fact check or whatever, but it seems very credible because she is also saying like, you know, mistakes that she made herself, whether it's like an innocent, naive mistake or, you know, there are some things she does where it's like, oh, that was just kind of bitchy.
Yeah.
But not a crime.
No.
Not a crime to be a bitch, because if it was, I'd be in jail.
Yeah. Let's try to zip through the rest of this pretty quick. Even though this is kind of the juicy part, But so where did we get? We got through the view chapter.
The talk is different. Just to be clear, it's a different view, show. But it's basically the view, but it's different.
Yeah, but it's on a different network, so
yeah,
it's legally distinct from the view.
Yeah. So I mean, this is when Katie and Tom file for divorce. She talks a little bit about meeting with Naz, who is Tom's next like assigned girlfriend. And that part is pretty juicy too, to be honest. But then finally she's like still inquiring, like, where is Shelly? I haven't seen Shelly in like 6 years, she realizes, and she leaves the church and files a missing person report for Shelly, which is something I kind of, you know, I've heard obviously like, where's Shelly? It's sort of like a meme at this point, almost like everyone is like, oh, this woman is missing. What the hell? I didn't realize that Leah was on who like filed that first missing person report.
Like, yeah, and it's included in the book. So yes, the actual police report is included in the book. So, you know, she filed an actual police report. And I do want to say that I don't know about you guys, but I don't believe that Shelly Miscavige is dead. I wish that she were to know. I wish that were the answer. I do not believe that she's dead. I believe that they're keeping her in a re-education camp. And when we say re-education camp, that is literally what they're talking about. They call it the hole, like, right? So they have to clean the fucking bathrooms with toothbrushes they use in their mouth.
Yeah.
It's really like humiliating, backbreaking, mental, physical labor. And that's where I personally think Shelly Miscavige is. I think she's in one of those camps.
Also what I think where she is.
Yeah. And Leah talks about how like she understood it was something like that, and she like went to a specific officer that she sort of trusted because he'd helped with security for like some event. Like, she knew this specific officer, and she was like, "Hey, I want to file this report, and listen, it's got to be this certain way. Like, I want you to, if you find her, give her this note from me and like wait with her and take her in the car with you if she says she wants to go. Because if you don't do it this way, they're just like, she'll never get the note. They're never going to do anything." And he's like, "Yeah, okay." But then the LAPD is like, "Oh no, we have a specific Scientology officer who has to deal with Scientology problems." Yeah. And he doesn't do any of the stuff that Leah said. And so they're like, "No, she's, yeah, oh.
She's been trying to get a note to her forever."
Yeah.
So that's the other thing. Like, she's been trying to get a note to her, even when she was still in Scientology. She's been trying to get a note to her, and it just is never happening. So
yeah. So yeah, she leaves. And as we said earlier, you know, she's got some friends in the business, including Kevin James, who seems like a fucking sweetheart. Who, you know, once this goes public, you know, are there for her, which is good because like.
Also, by the way, including Michelle Visage from RuPaul's. She is like the co-host of RuPaul's Drag Race. Okay. And she like was in a girl group in the 80s, and she is like, but mostly now I think is famous for being on RuPaul's Drag Race. She's also very good friends with Leah. And I'm like, how did you two meet? What? And I did some Googling. I never really figured out how they met exactly, but they're both like New York girlies. So it's sort of, now that it does make sense. They do seem like similar personality types. I was like, oh my God, you guys are besties. That's cute. She checks in on her. She also, I guess Jennifer Lopez's dad is a Scientologist, but not Jennifer. And Leah's like, "Jen, you know, your dad is going to want you to cut ties with me because I'm a suppressive person now. And I'm just, you know, I really liked your friendship, blah, blah." And Jennifer's like, "Well, I'm not doing that." And then, and she's like, "No, you don't understand. Your dad's really going to want you to because of Scientology." And Jennifer's like, "I'm not doing that." And then she doesn't. And they stay friends through the end of the book. But then I was recently Googling because when I went down my Michelle Visage Google hole, now there's Leah Remini, Jennifer Lopez feud rumors. And I'm like, oh no. But then it seems like that's mostly because she didn't go to her wedding with Ben Affleck. And then it was the same day as, or the same weekend of her 18-year-old daughter's graduation or something. So that is like, I don't know.
Yeah. And I don't know. I don't think it's over Scientology is the other thing. You can get into fights with people for a lot of things. We also kind of skipped over when she drops out of Scientology, she goes on Dancing with the Stars.
Yes.
That's a big part of the book. She's like so fucking hardcore into Dancing with the Stars. And yet at the same time, they even bring the pressure to bear there, and they're trying to get her, you know. I think it shows how they really bring this kind of pressure in every aspect of her life. So
yeah, like yeah. Kirstie Alley, like, is saying mean things and like trying to get Leah kicked off of Dancing with the Stars, yeah. And then this, like, it's so unhinged, but Leah is so sincere about it, where she's like, I've never really watched Dancing with the Stars, but I guess they have a challenge of, like, you know, that where you do a dance based on a big moment in your life, and they convince her to do a dance based on Leaving Scientology, and it's set to Katy Perry's Roar.
Yeah.
And she quotes the lyrics from Roar, and she's like, that is exactly how I felt. And I was like, yeah, this is so yeah. silly.
I meant to Google that, and I forgot.
We should all look it up after.
So I did watch it. It is bonkers. And the thing, too, is, like, I can't even – because Katy Perry's Roar is one of those songs where it's, like, it is silly, but then you listen to it, and you're like,
right.
Yeah, like yeah. – There
I
is
have felt like
song.
A plastic bag no, in the wind.
Pure
I have felt it, and people make fun of it also no. for being in Moulin Rouge the musical, and I'm like, no. Like, Satine does not know what a plastic bag is, but she has felt like a plastic bag, and that is true.
Pure, well, and pure pop perfection. You know, the idea, you know, you've heard the song that it's harder to write a pure pop song than it is to write a Bob Dylan song. And that's what Roar is. That at the beginning you're like, fuck you, and at the end you're like, yes! Yes, this is so true! And again, I think the Dancing with the Stars chapter is very much that. And when we talk about her speaking adolescently, well, you know, she joined a cult when she was 13 years old. So yeah. she has not had the same experiences. When you and I were 16 years old, we were in high school singing Roar, or whatever Roar was of our generation. And when she was 16, she was running an ad agency doing unpaid illegal child labor
yeah.
for other yeah. people in her cult. So she is adolescent because she joined a cult.
My yeah. Roar was Are You Out There by Dar Williams.
Nice. Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Mine was probably just the Rent cast recording.
Oh, I was going to say Cornflake Girl.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. Also that for sure. God, that's a good song.
Mine was probably the song Fancy by Reba McEntire.
Yes.
So.
yeah. It's your one chance.
And I'm not, you know, but Fancy was my name, you know, so.
God. Okay. So anyway, in short, good book. I went from like neutral posy on Leah Remini to like Kate said, would follow her into hell. I would follow her into the hole, but please someone come get me out. I want to be there, but I would follow her.
Yeah, I love this. I was glad that this was a good choice. I had a lot of fun listening to it. She reads the audiobook and it slaps. Like, if you okay. haven't read this and now you're thinking about reading it because we talked about it and you're an audiobook person, the audiobook is excellent. She is so funny. Mm. It's great.
You know, I hope both those things. I was like, there's no way she wouldn't read it. And I knew she'd be good at it because there's so many jokes set up into it, you know?
Yeah.
And
it's very like, I'm not Italian, but I grew up in New Jersey. So her whole manner of everything, like I'm a few years younger than, about 10 years younger than her, I think. But like her whole manner, everything about her is just so familiar and feels like I am at like a fucking family party or something with extended relatives and one of them is going off like while listening to her read this book. It was so fun. Strong recommend.
Yeah, and I will say I am Italian-American, as I've mentioned 800 times. And so I want to say to the other Italian-Americans listening to this, we should be so proud of her. And if you want a book that accurately reflects like our culture and our family and our so much of how we orient ourselves in the world, I really saw myself reflected in this book and in her family and in the way we view doing what's right no matter what is the cost. That's a part that makes me proud to be Italian-American. And if you're into that and you want to see something of our culture reflected really well, I recommend this book for that for sure.
Hey, let's start a petition to tear down statues of Christopher Columbus and replace
yes.
statues of Leah Remini.
Yes. Yes. I'm in it. I'm in it. She's going on my Italian American heroes list. For those of you that know, on Indigenous People Day, I always make a list of Italians that I would prefer to honor instead of the genocide doer who does me and my people no pride. So I'm going to add her to my list for sure. So.
All right. Well, if we haven't already convinced you to check out this book, let's move into dramatic readings. And we're not going to read it as well as Leah, but we'll try.
Yeah. I am going first. And actually, after me being like, it's so funny and she's so great, this is a pretty sad thing that also is something that has come up in other Scientology documentaries about what they do with babies in, if you're not a celebrity in Scientology, if you're in the Sea Org or you're a working Scientology member, they keep babies in a nursery, which is frequently a room with cribs and one person sort of watching many infants. And when they first got to the Sea Org, Leah's mom was pregnant with her sister Shannon. And this is Leah as a young teen in the Sea Org checking in on Shannon. I'm going to put here too, this reading does have a little bit of a content warning for neglect of children and babies. Whenever I could, I went to visit Shannon in the nursery, where she stayed during the day while my mom was working. Nursery was a charitable term for the motel room in the Quality Inn filled with cribs of crying, neglected babies, flies, and the smell of dirty diapers. The only ventilation came from a huge fan by the window. This was where Sea Org members and staff dropped off their babies at 7 in the morning and then picked them up at 10 in the evening when their workday was over. We had an hour for lunch, but the shuttle took half an hour to go from Flag back to the Quality Inn, so even if parents wanted to visit their children, they would have to turn around practically as soon as they arrived. I took advantage of any opportunity to sneak away and check in on Shannon. The first time I went to the nursery, I was devastated by what I found. The person in charge was a kid just like me, just some random teenage Sea Org member on post who was hardly qualified to be taking care of children. Shannon was crying and soaked with urine in her crib. Before changing her and returning to my post, I vowed I wouldn't let her grow up this way. The neglect was overwhelming. I would immediately demand the person on post clean up and change the babies. I would sometimes leave my post for a while to take Shannon out of there. I complained to my mother about it, and she complained to her seniors, who threatened that she would be taken off her job and demoted. She continued to voice her concerns about it, and they told her to write it up in a report, but nothing was ever done. It really weighed on me. Though I was buying into the program, it raised a question inside of me. While I didn't care so much about me, I wonder if we were really doing right by this baby.
All right, I'm going to read a little bit from The Wedding of the Century. And it again is maybe not the most, it doesn't highlight all of the jokes and stuff, but it's like such a drama moment. You gotta have it. And when she says we, she means herself and Jennifer Lopez, because they were getting ready together. And you can imagine it takes Jennifer Lopez a long ass time to get ready, and it's worth the time. Okay, so we left a bit later and did arrive late, but Tom's sister and assistant were arriving at the same time, so I wondered how late could we actually be? I was trying my best to keep my behind-the-scenes drama with the church to myself. It would have been bad PR to do otherwise. But I was on edge as we pulled into the beautiful courtyard of the medieval castle where trumpeters announced our arrival. The guests had to hike up the hill to the entrance, and in doing so, I stepped on my gown and ripped it. I was immediately taken to a room where one of the 10 in-house seamstresses from Armani, booked for the wedding, sewed it right up. I then joined the rest of the guests, who were being served champagne in a room with a fireplace that was as big as my living room. It was here, standing among Tom's assistants, that I casually asked them, "Where's Shelley? She should be here." Again, I thought it so odd she was not there. Total bad PR. In the past, Shelley was always by David's side. They responded with, "I don't want to be a part of this conversation," and walked away. Afterward, I saw Tommy Davis and asked him the same question. I hadn't seen Shelley for a few years now. I had heard she was on some type of special assignment, but I had my suspicions that the truth was far worse. "I mean, wherever she is, you could have dusted her off, cleaned her up, and gotten her out here," I said. Tommy replied, "I think it's odd that you're asking." no, it's odd that you are the spokesperson for the church, that you didn't have enough sense to realize that not having her here is a bigger PR blunder than anything. You don't have the rank to be asking about Shelley Miscavige, he replied. And with that, he shut down the conversation. We filed into the chapel where the ceremony was to take place. Everybody took their seats. Then Norman Starkey and Tom entered and took their places at the front of the chapel. And inexplicably, for the next 20 minutes, but what seemed like an eternity, Tom stood there with that everything is great look plastered on his face, even as the crowd grew uncomfortable. Finally, Jennifer leaned over and whispered in my ear, "Do you think Katie's coming?" Eventually, she did walk down the aisle. Tom and Katie wed in a Scientology ceremony where they vowed to never close their eyes in sleep on a disagreement or an upset. David Miscavige acted as Tom's best man, and Jessica, another Scientology girl, was by Katie's side most of the time. Then we all headed to the receiving line to greet the newlyweds. Tom and Katie hugged and said hello warmly to everyone, except Angelo and me. They bypassed us completely and moved on to kiss Jennifer and Mark. Yeah. So weird. Before this is really funny too, like when they get to Rome and sweet baby Leah has never left the country before and she's so excited and she's like planning an outfit for like, this is my shopping outfit and this is my sitting in a cafe drinking a cappuccino outfit and this is that. And anyway, like it's just really cute. And then there's this like fucked up wedding. And then Angie will have our last dramatic reading.
Okay. So mine is from the really end of the book and it's not as long. So I'm going to read one little part that I'm going to skip forward and I'm not going to read the end of the book, but I am very close to the end. My passage is very close to the end. So it's after everything and it's when she's really reflecting on everything that is in the book and is taking where she is. People are surprised when they hear I don't feel any anger towards my mother for getting us into Scientology in the first place. She stood by me when it mattered the most, after I left the church, and I know she always had my best interests at heart. She didn't want her daughters growing up in a bad environment. She wanted more for us, and yet she didn't have any other options for getting us out of Brooklyn. My mom, aspiring, hardworking, but without resources or a safety net, was the perfect candidate for Scientology. So she took us to Florida on a leap of faith, believing in what she was doing, just as I believe in what I'm doing now. And at the end, so this is in the reflection. We all have newfound strength and that we will never again believe just because. For most of my childhood and adult life, I thought I had the answers and most of the world was just lost. As I've grown, I've learned that I know almost nothing. And so in that, I feel reborn in a sense. I am reading, I go to therapy, I do things that bring me joy, learning to love the one person I didn't like very much, myself. I am a combative, inquisitive, argumentative person, and I will never allow anyone to change that. I still have anger, but I'm okay with that because it fuels me to continue to right any wrongs I may see. And it's because of that and the support of my true friends and family that I was able to fight my way out of Scientology and see the world for the first time.
Yes, Leah. Yeah. Yes.
I love this woman.
Woo, Leah, we believe in you.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to move on to Reader's Advisory, where we suggest some things to read or watch instead of or in addition to Troublemaker. I do think Troublemaker is a great read. I haven't seen her documentary, Leah Remini's Scientology in the Aftermath, but now I really want to. And it does look like it's free streaming on Tubi, which is one of those weird free streaming site app things. So if you can get Tubi, you can watch it also.
Yeah. Also unrelated to Scientology, this episode or Leah, also a ton of Mystery Science Theater is streaming on Tubi. So it's a good reason to sign up for a free account.
Oh my gosh. Nice. There's so much good stuff on Tubi, you guys. It really, if you are into movies at all, it's just such a, and right now this weekend, it'll be old by the time we post this, but a show called Big Mood is streaming. I've already started it. It stars Nicola Coughlin. It's really good. It's super funny. Ooh. It's like Girls, but if there was like actually people of color and fat people on it.
Ooh.
It's really nice. Good. It's called Big Mood. So, and yeah, Tubi's great. I love Tubi.
Yeah, there's a ton of great horror movies on Tubi too, but specific to Renata's interests.
Yes. I'm saluting.
I would recommend going clear both the book by Lawrence Wright and the documentary specifically about Scientology. There is a great YA cult fiction book. It doesn't really have anything to do with this, except that it's by friend of the show, Courtney Summers. And we always take a moment to promote Courtney when we can. It's called The Project.
Hell yes.
And also, hopefully future friend of the show, Colin Dickey, wrote his most recent book is Under the Eye of Power, which is about conspiracy theories and like cult conspiracies in the United States.
And I have seen every episode of Leah Remini's Annie show. I recommend it, especially if you want to learn more about Scientology. It's structured really great. It breaks down big issues in Scientology episode by episode. And she spends a lot of time with Mike Rinder, who is also really popular, high ranking in the church, and he also defected. I've read a lot of books about Scientology. And in addition to Going Clear, I recommend Inside Scientology by Janet Reitman. She's a journalist. She spent years researching it. And it all comes out in this book. It's a really great read. It looks at a lot of the non-celebrity side of it, and a lot of the work that they do to suppress the work of journalists. Also, if you're really interested in writing more, there's a website called The Underground Bunker from Tony Ortega. Tony Ortega is one of the first and most important Scientology reporters in the country, in the world. And he's been persecuted and chased for years. And he used to edit The Village Voice. And now he runs a website. And his work on Scientology has been invaluable. And if you just want some entertainment, one of the greatest American films ever made is The Master by P.T. Anderson, and it stars the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman as the fictional version LRH deserved, which is the worst person you've ever met in your life who you can't look away from. And The Master is not about Scientology, but it's totally about Scientology, and you'll never get over it. So if you're into film, you should check it out.
I'll link to this also. I forgot. There's one, the journalist, Yashar Ali has a newsletter that, in part reports on Scientology, and he has a really good issue that's long and you can read it, where he has followed up about the missing persons case and Shelley Miscavige. And, I'll link to that. It's really interesting. And we'll maybe have some other books and movies up on the website, which is worstbestsellers.com.
And just really quickly, the last thing I'll say, I mentioned Tony Ortega. I went to his website right now, and literally the top story on his website is about how Leah Remini he thinks that Leah Remini is not getting a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame because her advocacy against Scientology. It's literally the top post right now. Is Leah Remini's advocacy against Scientology keeping her from an honor she deserves? And you know what, Leah? We will show up. The three of us will be there, and we will show up if you get a walk. Yeah. The Hollywood Walk of Fame. We'll cheer you on.
Yes.
Yes.
Or also, could you get Kevin James to come? Just like, I want to talk to him. I have some things I want to talk to him about. If you could just get him to come. So.
And or what if we just vandalize one of the other stars and just put her name on that? Because there's some people who have stars who like don't really, you shouldn't have.
Girls trip.
Yes. But first, let's do a little boys trip to the world of The Rock, Paper, Snicked, where Kate will say who Dwayne The Rock Johnson would be if he were in this book, and I'll say who Wolverine from X-Men would be if he were in this book. And Angie can choose which most enhances the book, or she can choose paper, which is to leave it as is.
So I felt a little weird about putting The Rock into this book, given how close he is in the actual subject matter of the book, being that it takes place in Hollywood and he is an actor in Hollywood. So I just thought that it would be nice if maybe after Leah escaped Scientology, The Rock just stopped by and they had a nice cup of tea and hung out. Or maybe some of his tequila, and he congratulated her on leaving a cult, and, you know, that, you know, in such a way that it does not affect Leah's agency as a person who really did go through this tough time. So that's what I would do.
Yeah, he'd be like, oh, you can't drink alcohol when you're in Scientology, but now you're free to enjoy the the rich taste of Terramana tequila.
Yeah.
Here you go. Okay. If Wolverine were in this book, I think he would, you know, I think really it would be that like Jubilee or somebody like was watching the news or something and mentioned that Shelley Miscavige was missing, and he got a little interested in it and then used his superhuman tracking senses to go find her and then use his very sharp claws to retrieve her and, you know, bring her to a nice deprogramming facility or something. And so You know, it wouldn't really change much of Leah's life, but she wouldn't still be, you know, worried about where her friend is.
Oh my God, you guys, those are both so good. Like, both of those are so like satisfying. I can't. Oh my God. Like, I definitely want Leah Remini to have tequila with The Rock, but mm-hmm. I do want Shelley Miscavige to be rescued more. So I have to go with Wolverine. And I do want to also say one of the most famous fanfics in Veronica Mars fandom is, I don't know if you guys know this, but Jason Doering, who played Logan on Veronica Mars, is a Scientologist.
I didn't know that.
Yep. Sorry. Lifelong. And that one of the most famous fanfics in Veronica Mars is, it turns out it's real person fan fiction, and he goes undercover to break people out of the, yeah, it's a whole, anyway, a fun game also to play is people you like that you find out were Scientologists. So I gotta go.
That sounds like a fun fan fiction.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Right, we'll look into that. We'll link to that.
Okay.
Okay. Now it is time for Duarte's Corner, where my cat Duarte shares his opinions. Duarte, I agree. I would love it if you could have a chance to bite all of these people. I can't think of very many people who deserve to be bitten like hard with your sharp little teeth than like David Miscavige. And I would love to make that happen, but.
Yeah. And I do think you make a good point that it would be really unassuming because people wouldn't necessarily expect a cat to be going on a revenge mission. And.
Because you're such a little guy.
Solid.
And that would make you perfect for it, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're like right at Tom Cruise's height. Mm-hmm. Zing.
Dang.
JK, of course, we love and respect short kings, unless you are like running a cult. And
Right. Also one of my best work friend, when I was telling him we were doing this, he was like, Have you ever thought about getting audited? And I was like, no, man.
What?
Because they follow you for your entire life. And I'm like, if I thought I could do it without them following me, yes. But they follow you for your entire life. And if you ever even like look at Scientology, they count you as a member. So I'm like, no, it's too high stakes.
Yeah.
I went to the L. Ron Hubbard house in DC one time and I used a fake name in the sign book.
Yes. Yeah. Because my work friend and I, he and I are really into woo-woo, you know, like we love making fun of it and stuff. And so he was like, oh, yeah. And I'm like, no, man, they would follow you like forever. But and then he was like, I found a guy on YouTube and he said he made a fake one. And I'm like, well, we should look that guy up. You and I should go find that guy and be like, hey, we want to do a fake. I mean, like that should be a summer trip that we go on. Like.
Yeah, one of the things that Leah even says is that she, like, the church kept wanting her to get, like, her celebrity friends recruited into the church. And if people even expressed interest in it, she would tell them to, like, never give them your phone number, never give them your address, because if you do, you'll receive mail for the rest of your life and they will call you constantly. And she knew people who had to shut down their mailboxes because they went to one session and were getting so much mail that they like literally couldn't handle it.
Right. Which is not to say, you know, okay. Not that I haven't been curious, but no.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Duarte, thanks as ever for sharing your opinions. And I do hope that someone bites David Miscavige soon.
Me too.
Do any humans have any other closing thoughts besides supporting the pro-biting agenda?
Not really. Honestly, not that Duarte would do this should he bite David Miscavige, of course. But I can't think of... Well, I guess I can think of. There aren't that many people who I think are as worthy of getting rabies as David Miscavige. Put it that way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Duarte is up to date on his shots. Yes. Want that on the record. He's a good, clean boy.
Yeah, but no, this was a great pick. I'm so glad that I've read it. I am going to go watch her series.
Yeah.
And it was fun.
They also have a special bonus episode after, I think, the second season that's all about Jehovah's Witnesses as a cult.
Ooh. So that's cool.
If you've ever been interested in learning more about that, I dated a guy who escaped Joe was being a J-dub, and it was really revealing. And so
my family is a splinter cell of escaped Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yeah,
that's my fun cult connection.
I kind of always, you know, I dated this guy. He was one of my pretty serious boyfriends. So he literally, the day he turned 18, his parents were like, you either unquestioningly accept this religion or get out of our house and never speak to us again. And he was like, wait. And he hasn't talked to him in almost 30 years at this point. And so I always knew it was like really bad, but it's something else. So that's like an extra additional thing at the end, because so many people reached out to Leah Remini and Mike Render about making this series after the series. And so if you're interested in that, it's an add-on. So
that sounds fun. All right. Well, if you want to come talk to us on social media, tell us about what cults your family may or may not be connected to. We are on Facebook, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Worst Bestseller spelled normally. Our Twitter is mostly in memoriam, but it's still up at Worst Bestseller with no S, because the S was a suppressive person and we got rid of it.
You can find us on Spotify, Amazon, Apple Podcasts, all of the places where you find podcasts. And if you do find us, take a moment to rate and review. When you rate and review, it moves us up on the charts and makes it easier for new people to find us. If you don't rate and review, we will start sending mailers to your home constantly, nonstop, until you file a restraining order
against us. And have to get a new address.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or until we run out of stamps.
That also. You can also find us on Patreon at patreon.com/worstbestsellers. Patreon is a service where we give us a small monthly recurring donation that we use to do things like keep our equipment up to date and keep our website up and running. And in return, there are perks for you, like postcards and stickers in the mail and a monthly bonus episode of the podcast where we will talk about things we've been into lately. Additionally, we have merch available at worstbestsellers.com, where you can click on the merch shop to find all sorts of designs from our podcast to wear on your body. And finally, we do have a Discord server, which is also linked from worstbestsellers.com. Come join us there, where you can talk about episodes, what you're reading, what you're watching on TV, what crafts you're doing, your theories about the new Taylor Swift album, any lingering thoughts that you have about Riverdale, how the X-Men cartoon is treating you, or show us pictures of your cat or anything else.
Please show us pictures of your cat. I would love to see them. Or you can also just send me your pictures of your cat. I'm online at Renata Snacks.
I don't want pictures of your cat, but I would love to hear about what cults your family members are in at 14 across on Blue Sky and Instagram. And Angie, where can people find you if they would like to hear more from you?
Yeah. Well, I always want to talk about the films of Paul Thomas Anderson, or, you know, how the latest Mission Impossible was kind of a downer because the bad guy was AI, which is a real thing in case you guys haven't seen it. And it's true, you guys. At one point, they're in a club and they're like, it's here with us. The entity is here with us. So my friend Angela and I are always like, is it the entity? Is the entity doing it too? Okay. So I'm embarrassed to admit that you can still find me on Twitter, fuck Elon Musk. And on Twitter, I am still regrettably Miss Kubelik after the 1960 movie, The Apartment, the greatest American film ever made by Billy Wilder. And I always like to talk about movies and Dean Winchester and terrible books and great books too. So come say hi.
Yay. Well, Angie, thank you so much for joining us. Always a treat to talk to you.
Thanks for having me. I never get tired of coming. You guys are the best.
Aww, oh, no, you.
Thanks.
And we will be back. We're continuing Celebrity Memoir May with Open Book by Jessica Simpson.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. I think it's going to be a pretty good month for us.
Yeah.
So we'll see you then, and we'll see you on the internet. And bye.
Bye. I know, because I laugh so loud that sometimes it sounds like Renata is telling jokes to a dead audience, because it just cuts my laughter entirely.
No, I know. Last night I spent a lot of time just amplifying laughter back up to Audible because I was like, I will have this joke be received.